Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We mentioned in headlines that the report out of The Athletic, Kelly Eco and Sam Amick of The Athletic had a longer piece kind of summarizing where the Suns are with trying to move Kevin Durant right now. And the report was the Rockets have made a firm offer. That's their words in the article. But none of the offers out of the Rockets, Spurs, or the Miami Heat are moving the Suns to do anything right now. They're trying to drum up other offers. Text message, thank God the Rockets should have never considered Durant. Okay, hold on a second. This saga is not over yet. And by the way, they are considering Durant. They're just not offering enough to go get Durant. You sound like somebody who just doesn't want Kevin Durant on the team at all under any circumstances. They're very much considering having him on the team. It would appear they just don't want to give up enough to get him as of right now. But right. I think this is far from over, the Kevin Durant thing, you know?
But at the very least, I can see where he's coming from, that texter, and just that, okay, so it looks like he's happy that, okay, it looks like they're not likely to land him. They shouldn't have even been considering him, but they did. They made a firm offer.
Yeah.
And Phoenix said, that offer is firm in a bad way, like an orange that you just know is going to be bad
before you
even peel it.
That's
right. Oh, it's a rock hard orange.
That's right. Yeah. But these are negotiations. Bro. Things can change. Now, that orange is never going to become soft and edible again. But the negotiations can change with the Rockets and the Suns.
As we've said all along, it's not that the Rockets... I think sometimes people have a tendency to frame it as like, okay, well, what are the Suns willing to give up or what do they want from the Rockets?
Yeah.
It's not about the Suns specifically. It's about what the other teams are willing to offer the Suns. And then also with Kevin Durant, whether he just flat out would prefer to go to the Rockets instead of, because Durant can put the kibosh on any of these things.
He can.
And he might just decide, nope, no way, no how with Minnesota. I don't like it. I'd smell something I don't like.
Yeah, he's got the leverage of only being on the last year of his deal. He wants an extension. So it's a very nuanced situation. We did the gun to the head thing at the end of the show yesterday. You said yes. I said no as far as whether I thought Durant would be a Rocket come the beginning of the season. But I understand. We're far from over with this thing.
Yeah, and it was dumb by me. If I thought back on it just rationally, it's the Rockets versus three other teams.
Yeah.
At least that's what it looks like right now. So the field is always the favorite. But I think Rafael Stone is in a good position where I think he likes the idea of Kevin Durant on this team. It's an immediate improvement to the offense.
Yeah.
And yet he also likes his chances of growing this with homegrown guys and maybe making some moves on the margins to improve shooting. So he's in a good spot where he doesn't have to stretch or reach in a fit of desperation to overspend for
the Heat were a team that barely made the playoffs and got blown out by 40 in the last play-in tournament game because their team didn't even seem to want to be there. Or in the last game of their playoff series, I should say. They played their way into the play. The Heat and Spurs are both teams that need Kevin Durant just to get into the postseason. Whereas I think if the Rockets miss out on Kevin Durant, they've got other avenues or they run back with this crew. This crew was a 2 seed last year. So, logically, you think there's going to be some improvement with the young guys. So we'll see what happens. We'll talk about that more a little later on in this segment, the Kevin Durant situation, and we've got some audio for that as well. Nick Caserio, Patrick Doherty, who covers the NFL, was on a podcast. Patrick Doherty is actually a fantasy football guy, but provides a lot of content. He was on Kevin Clark's podcast, and he did a GM ranking, Seth, where Nick Caserio came in 12th out of the 32 GMs. We're going to get to something Patrick Daugherty said here in just a second, but this was Kevin Clark chopping it up with him, saying that Caserio will be judged not on what he's done so far, but more than anything on how this upcoming season looks.
Nick Caserio to me should be lower than 12.
Well, Caserio in question.
I feel so bad that this show has become me combing through your list and being like, this is, you are bad.
Well, you can
so
see Caserio, how hard this is. It's like,
it's top heavy. It's top heavy. He hit on Stroud, he hit on Will Anderson. But to me, the Caserio eval is going to come after this year. Because did you fix the offensive line, which we know was a glaring problem? Did you hit on one of those Iowa State receivers that's going to help CJ Stroud this year? Like, to me, this is the year. This is Nick Caserio's biggest year by far.
Do you agree with that? That this is Nick Caserio's biggest year coming up here?
Yes, except that no, I don't actually.
Okay.
Because it's like, for one, like anybody, and you know, the people that like to fashion themselves the nerdy football types, like, you know, you don't judge a GM by 1 year. Right. So he gave Caserio credit for the original draft from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I think this year is this past draft. Like, you flat out don't know until it goes. But so 1 year is going to undo the good things he did in the previous year. Now, I think also whenever you're having some kind of conversation about Nick Caserio, you got to take into account the fact that he stepped into a tremendously dysfunctional, bad situation
ever, in so many ways.
And it took a couple of years to right the ship. So without giving him credit for that and then acting like since this guy only brought the last couple of drafts into play, like, okay, so you're going to give him credit for the previous year's draft, but somehow this year's draft is going to undo any of the good things you did in previous years. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
I thought that, and that was Kevin Clark, who was. We'll hear from this Daugherty guy on the division titles.
That was Kevin Clark. I like him.
That was Kevin
Clark.
But
he's also like nerdy in a good way, but that's just like the people that want to act like they're statistically based and analytical and everything. Like, no, you know that you don't judge a draft 1 year out. It's a 3 year process.
In judging Nick Caserio as a GM, I thought it was a little disingenuous just to say, well, he got Stroud and Will Anderson, and so it's a little top heavy. That's the only thing he's done. Like, Nick's done a lot of good things as the GM, and the move to get Will Anderson was an incredibly bold move to go do that.
I 100% agree with him about the offensive line, though. That's the big dynamic.
And that's where, I mean, maybe we're just parsing semantics here on he'll be judged by this upcoming season. I do think of all the good things Nick's done, the offensive line is the one thing that he's not been able to get right as the general manager so far. You know, like I know that Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil were Bill O'Brien picks, or Bill O'Brien era picks or trades in the case of Tunsil. Nick Caserio extended both of them. Nick Caserio brought in Shaq Mason. He drafted Kenyon Green. He drafted Juice Scruggs. They've not been able to get that position group right yet. Now, I don't think Nick Caserio is on any semblance of a hot seat right now, to be very clear, but I would say this is by far his most important endeavor or project as the GM, is getting this O-line right.
Right, right. But also just in the, like, if you did want to take it back to before they had the coaching and the salary cap and everything else in shape, you're just going to leave Nico Collins and Derek Stingley Jr.
Exactly.
And Jalen Petrie out of guys that they've drafted. He basically made it sound like, well, you know, he got lucky with CJ Stroud and he got lucky with Will Anderson, but now we'll really see. All right.
He called it top heavy, and it's not. I mean, those are the two marquee things, but there have been several other really good moves made in the middle tier and on the margins as well. Just the O-line. The O-line he's not been able to get right yet, and that's undeniable. This is Patrick Daugherty, who is also on that podcast. All right, Seth, do you agree with this? It's almost a little drive-by comment. He doesn't lay out all the reasons. I was a little mad that it was framed this way, the Texans' two division titles. Take a listen.
This is why this exercise is so imperfect and difficult, because you cannot completely disregard the results. And the results have been back-to-back 10-7 division championships, win a playoff game both years. You can't just ignore that, but do I think that was probably a fluke? I kind of do. But I can't just say, like, I have to be humble enough that, you know, I might not understand all of this. I might not know all the dynamics at play, like what's really going on. So that's why I can't just straight up ignore things like Nick Caserio's roster winning back-to-back wild card rounds.
It's the funniest thing. I feel like the tone of this guy, the gravitas of this Daugherty guy, like agonizing. I'm like, dude, It's your list. You put him 12th. It's okay.
Like, well, and also it's like, wait, is it was a fluke to win the AFC South
twice? Yeah, yeah.
Is this some kind of like, oh no, they somehow they won the AFC North
twice? No.
Yeah, you're right.
It was a fluke to win it twice.
It's the AFC South.
Yeah.
And last year, you were 10-7. The Colts were 8-9. Yeah. The Jags and the Titans won 4-3 games. Like, that's somehow a fluke. But then this is what bothers me. And again, I'm not acting like the Texans are the greatest thing in the world because they won a couple wild card games. Yeah. They destroyed the Browns. They destroyed the Chargers
in
the wild card games.
That's right.
I don't get where somehow that's flukish.
Nope.
I vehemently object to the use of the word flukish when, like, winning a weak division is somehow flukish.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. I'm offended by him.
Okay. Well, we may hear that take again on Friday in Takeamania, so just brace yourself. And this is total devil's advocate here, because I 100% disagree with the labeling of the Texans two AFC South champion. Two, by the way. A fluke is something that typically happens once. You can, like, for like to say that they won these two AFC South division titles, so that's kind of a fluke. I'm like, it happened twice.
Well, no, by a 10-win football team where you're looking at, yes, a division in which last year the Jaguars and the Titans had a combined 7 wins.
Yep.
Like, I don't get the flukishness of all that.
And again, complete devil's advocate, because I completely disagree with him. I don't think there's anything flukish about last year's division title. They weren't a good offense, but they were a really good defense in the division. You win the division by 2 games. It's not a fluke. It's a bad division, but it's not a fluke that the Texans are the team that wins the division. The first year they won the division, and you and I talked about this off the air a little bit, that game in Week 18 against the Colts was for a spot in the postseason. It was widely thought going into that weekend that the winner of that game would be one of the wild card teams, and that the Jags would take the Titans to the woodshed and clinch the division, even though the Jags had been playing poorly since beating the Texans in Week 12 that season. They were 8-3 at one point. They ended up finishing the season 9-8, I think. They won 1 game the rest of the way. The Titans beating the Jags in Week 18 was not something that people saw coming necessarily. Does that make it a fluke that the Texans won the division instead of being a wild card? I don't know.
The Texans weren't you could very easily make the case, and I think what he was probably thinking of it is, yeah, that was the year where the Texans won a bunch of one score games.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
They just as easily could have been a 7-win team if the ball had bounced a different way.
That's exactly what he's thinking. You're exactly
right.
You can't
discount. Maybe he should have used the word random.
Yeah.
But like the Jaguars, you know, okay, yes, people expected the Jaguars to beat the Titans, not because the Jaguars were good, but because it was a meaningless game for the Titans.
Yes.
And Derrick Henry ran all over them. The score, the run, the points differential for the Jaguars that year at the end of the year, they were +6. So, like, the Texans were, and the Texans weren't very impressive. They were +23 or +24.
Yeah.
The Jaguars were +6.
Yeah.
And they lost, but they weren't a good team at the end of the year.
Yep.
And a team where Mike Vrabel decided, no, we're going to try to win this thing. Derrick Henry ran all over them and they lost. So there's nothing flukish about it.
Yeah.
It was just that it wasn't a good division. And the Texans had the ball bounce their way on a bunch of one score games. That happens.
Yeah. Not a fluke, man. Enjoy those division titles, people. All right. Savor the moment.
Crappy division, but not a fluke.
Crappy division. Yeah. Someone's got to win every division, right? There's got to be a division winner in each of them.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The rookie class is I've enjoyed watching these rookies at rookie minicamp, OTAs, and regular minicamp, particularly Jaden Higgins. If you're looking for reasons to get excited about training camp in the upcoming season, I think Jaden Higgins is the rookie. It gets me the most excited. Boy, just based on some of the plays he was making in minicamp. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Jaden Higgins.
It's been really exciting to see this Jaden's growth process in a short amount of time that he's been here. I've seen a guy who's steadily got better every single week. You've seen him make even more plays, and seeing him today, I mean, this is the most plays that he's made, and in our last week of camp, to see a rookie who's come in and showing right now that he could be an impact player for us, I think it means a lot. And we saw it as coaches watching this film from the college game. But I think it just means a lot to the entire team, the players, defensive players, other offensive players, actually seeing him thrive in practice. Because I truly believe if you take practice the right way, deliberately, and you work at it, it'll show up in the games. And so it's really awesome to see the work that he's doing and the plays that he's making.
I was just thinking about this, Seth. Think about the top two rookies the Texans took, the two rookie second-round picks, Jaden Higgins, wide receiver, Iowa State, and then they trade up and they take Ariante Ursery. These guys in practice are going against Derek Stingley Jr. and Will Anderson Jr. And if they're not going against them, they're going against Kamari Lassiter and Daniil Hunter. You know, like these guys, I can't think if you're a wide receiver or an offensive tackle, if there's a better iron sharpens iron situation than these guys are getting in practice.
Right,
every day.
Right. Yeah, and that's a good sign. As you lay it out that way, I'm thinking about some of the reports out of Cleveland where Shedeur Sanders has looked the best in practice and what have you.
Yeah.
But for whatever it's worth, and I'm not trying to read too much into OTAs and minicamp, except Shedeur Sanders hasn't been running with the ones, whereas Dylan Gabriel has.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference for a rookie quarterback.
For sure.
So I'm not trying to, who knows ends up being better, but the way the Browns coaching staff is looking at it is I see people looking at Shedeur as the most likely to start week one or the most likely rookie to play first. At least as of now, the Browns seem to be testing and putting Dylan Gabriel in more situations that are difficult. So with Jaden Higgins, yeah, the fact that he's doing that against the ones,
yeah,
and getting the positive reports that maybe Dylan Gabriel isn't, it's a really good sign. And it's something the Texans have done a couple of years now, where Kamari Lassiter last year, they put him out there with the ones right from the get-go. D'Amico spoke highly of him, and they put trust in him right from the get-go in the regular season. I think it's easier with a wide receiver, especially when you've already got Nico Collins out there.
Yeah.
Because if a rookie outside wide receiver has some hiccups along the way, it's not devastating to you the same way it's devastating if a rookie cornerback has some bad plays.
Yeah.
And I think that I'll be really surprised if Jaden Higgins isn't getting a lot of touches or at the very least a lot of snaps early in the season.
Speaking of Nico Collins, he was on the Greenlight podcast with Chris Long and was asked about the young receivers, including Higgins.
Man, I feel like those group of guys, man, they coming in with a mission, you know, to get better, learn, you know, and trying to be a great, you know, valuable to the offense, you know, and Higgins is a dude special. You know, he kind of reminds me of Mike Evans. You know, he can stretch the field, tall, lanky, he can move, quick at the line, good with his hands. Man, dude's nice, man. The sky's the limit for him, man. I can't wait, you know, to see when the season comes. Can't wait to share the field. Well, no, man, go out there making plays in front of the city and smiling while doing it. You know, just having fun, you know. But yeah, the dude's special, man. And he got all the tools in the world, for sure.
Mike Evans has been getting a lot of love from the Texans wide receivers.
I know.
Because on the Greenlight Pride podcast, Nico cited Mike Evans as a guy that he emulated.
Yeah.
And then he just gave a compliment to Jaden Higgins by saying he sees Mike Evans in his game. Jaden Higgins, in an interview he did before the draft, said that Mike Evans was one of the guys he watches a lot and would like to try to emulate. So there's and with Higgins, when you watch the way he moves, he's got so much that he's a little bit different than Nico, and not in a good way or in a bad way, but I think maybe a little bit more supple with his movements, and he's got to learn to do all those things that's hard for big guys to do, is like being really crisp with your routes and everything. But you can see him working at it, and you can kind of see a progression through college, and he does very much, just from watching interviews with him and what Nick Caserio has said about him, he seems to be that classic film junkie type of guy that football nerd just wants to soak it all in type of guy that they really like having on the team.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Caserio. He brought this up proactively on our show when Nick was on with us about a week ago. He's on with us last Thursday. If you missed it, good conversation. You can get it on our podcast on the Odyssey app. But he told a quick anecdote about not just Jaden Higgins, but his teammate, college and pro, former Iowa State teammate, now Texan, Jalen Knoll.
Iowa State kids have come in here and done a really good job as well. And I mean, just anecdotally, I mean, talk about work. I mean, you know, we practice and then Jalen, you know, has kind of missed a few practices here. But I mean, a weight room is right outside of D'Amico in my office. And you know, one day we kind of look around, and you hear a bunch of noise and you got the jugs machine set up in the weight room. And you got Higgins and Knoll with their helmets on, catching balls off the jugs, basically after their meetings or after practice, you know, and just because they're trying to work on their craft and get better. So we didn't have to tell them anything. They're doing that on their own. I mean, so I'd say that's a good place to start. And those are the things that you have to do in order to be a successful football player.
You know what? I think I'm misremembering. I think that Jaden Higgins actually said, I think he said Keenan Allen was the guy that he watches.
Okay.
Because the interviewer thought that he would say somebody like Mike Evans.
Yeah.
And I did like that answer just because, you know, Keenan Allen does some funky stuff.
And
stuff that bigger guys, because Higgins is a couple inches taller than Keenan Allen, might not necessarily do or try. But say my point remains that, yeah, they like he wants to work at it. He wants to work at his craft and all his other cliches.
Yeah. Texter says, I think this is D'Amico's a bigger year for D'Amico than it is for Caserio. Let's be very clear. I don't think either of them are in any danger of getting fired or anything like that.
Nobody's framed it that way that they're going to get fired. But in terms of impressing, like those guys were talking about their GM rankings.
Yeah.
So for if they're saying, okay, I've got Caserio ranked here, but maybe he should be lower.
Yeah.
They're saying, okay, then you know, perhaps you know he'll get higher if they can prove that the offensive line is good. Likewise for D'Amico, it is. I mean, if you have doubts about whether D'Amico can be a defensive minded head coach that has a consistently good offense, especially if you're a really good defensive minded coach, there's still a really good chance that you're going to have to be hiring a new offensive coordinator every few years. That's really the big test for D'Amico. Because last year the defense was good enough. Defense was good enough to do whatever you wanted to do. They can always get better. And there's some things they need to improve on, but the offense was the one that was holding them back. And that's so I could say for both of those guys, yeah, I think in my appraisal of those guys as a GM or as a head coach, the offensive line and the offensive strength in general is a reflection of those two guys.
Yeah, no, and you're right. I'm putting my spin on it, but like that's where when the guy says it's a bigger year for D'Amico or a bigger year for Nick, my tiebreaker on this is okay. Like, what if the year goes wrong? Then what does one have a different fate than the other? And I don't think they do. You know, I think they're both kind of attached at the hip on this thing. Is all. Yeah, keep texting in, 713-572-4610. All right, let's circle back to Kevin Durant. If you missed it, a report in The Athletic from Kelly Eco, Sam Amick, they combined on an article that kind of lays out where things are with Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns right now. And as of right now, the Suns have not gotten offers from any of the teams Durant wants to go to that have move them enough to trade Durant yet. Here's Brian Windhorst of ESPN saying Phoenix does not like the offers they're getting.
What I understand, the three teams on Durant's list, Miami, San Antonio, and Houston, have not made offers that have gotten Phoenix excited to this point. To this point is very important. Minnesota was aggressive at midseason, and Minnesota, from what I understand, has been the most aggressive team in these trade talks. I do think Toronto is lurking out there. Toronto is making the number 9 pick in this draft, in addition to some players available in multiple different scenarios. And I think the LA Clippers are lurking out there as well. But I would say right now, if I had to put a favorite, I definitely think Minnesota is the team that's been most aggressive.
Okay, Minnesota's been the most aggressive. Now, here's Shams Charania, ESPN, also saying KD does not want to go to Minnesota.
I'm told the Phoenix Suns remain in active conversations around the league on a Kevin Durant deal, but their focus over the last several days has been on three teams, and that's the Miami Heat, Houston Rockets, and Minnesota Timberwolves. We know his preferred destinations, though, are the Rockets, Spurs, and the Heat. And so the Suns have been working with Durant's business partner, Rich Kleiman, on just figuring out exactly where he could end up. Could it be one of his three preferred destinations? Could it be a wild card team? Because, listen, at the end of the day, his expiring contract of $54.7 million is going to play a part in this. And I'm told Durant has no desire to be in Minnesota with the Timberwolves. So how does that shape how the Minnesota Timberwolves and other teams that could have interest that are outside of his preferred list decide how to move forward with these Durant discussions.
Okay. The one other thing, just from that article in The Athletic that we should point out, is the exact words where the Rockets have made a firm offer to the Phoenix Suns. Now, I don't know if that means firm in so much as like, this is it, best and final, or if it's just they've made a concrete offer like, hey,
they're not just speaking in generalities.
Yeah. So that's where they are with the Rockets right now. And the other teams. I mean, Kevin Durant's going to be on the move at some point here, but it's an interesting trade market because he's going to be 37 years old. He's dealt with a ton of injuries, including last season. He didn't play in enough games last season to be considered for any of the awards or all NBA. He only played 62 games. You got to play 65. He's getting older. He's still, when he's on the floor, he plays at an elite level. And oh, by the way, he wants a contract extension. Well, he's up for a 2-year, $112 million contract extension.
The Suns have a new GM, and he's been on the job for about a month or so, Brian Gregory. And there's some similarity here to when, hey, Raphael Stone was a new GM when all of a sudden he had to trade away James Harden.
Yeah.
And you don't want your first move to be, well, we gave away James Harden for pennies on the dozen, and he ended up getting a real good haul for James Harden. I think Brian Gregory is in that same position where, okay, I've been on the job a month now, and I got to trade away a superstar. There's no way in hell I'm going to, because you look at it and you say, man, the Suns really don't have a whole lot of options. They got to take the best available offer. But he doesn't want to be the chump that gives him away for nothing.
Right.
And the other dynamic, just as it is with any superstar player, is that player can put the kibosh on the trade just by expressing disgruntlement with it. No team wants to trade for a guy that doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, as Shams pointed out with Minnesota right there. I think the other big thing Gregory is dealing with, Seth, that Raphael Stone wasn't dealing with when he traded for James Harden, is when they traded for James Harden, the Rockets
traded away
knew
James Harden.
Traded away James Harden. Sorry,
yeah.
When they traded away James Harden to Brooklyn, the one I guess kind of liberating element to that trade for Stone as opposed to Gregory is that the Rockets knew they were going into a rebuild. You know, just stacking a bunch of first round picks was going to be just fine for the Rockets, and there was no expectations for them being competitive for the next several years, and that came to fruition. The Suns, all reports are, the Suns want to remain a competitive basketball team. They're going to give Devin Booker a big contract extension. So you don't give somebody $70 million a year or whatever it is they're going to give Devin Booker and then rebuild around that. He's 28 or 29. So if they're doing, like, I think the reason the Suns want to do a trade with Minnesota is because Minnesota reportedly is offering, you know, Rudy Gobert and Julius Randle and maybe Dante DiVincenzo, like those are three guys that when you put them with Devin Booker and whatever other complementary pieces they have, I don't know if you win the West with that team, but if the goal is to remain competitive and get back into the postseason, like a big guy like Rudy Gobert raises the floor of a team. I don't know if you win a title with him as your center, but you are a highly competitive regular season team when you got a rim protector like that.
Yeah, Then it probably aligns with why most Rockets fans just flat out, or it seems like most don't want this trade to happen with Durant, because a lot of the trade proposals involve
players,
one or two more core young players than people are willing to give up. And I'm in that boat too.
Yeah.
If it ended up being some draft, if it was all draft picks, I'd be gung-ho for it. Mm-hmm. Rockets have too many draft picks right now.
Yeah.
So I'd be gung-ho for it. I'd be willing to part with one of the young studs, other than Amen Thompson, perhaps. But beyond that, I just don't have an appetite for it. And as long as Minnesota can actually give up those active players, I think that they've just got more of what the Suns are looking for.
It's wild. Like, it's Kevin Durant, and he's doing elite things. He's old, but he's doing elite things. And Minnesota, San Antonio, and the Rockets are all like, nah, take it or leave it. Here's our offer. Like, it's Kevin Durant. It's just, it's really, especially, and I know it's apples and oranges, but especially when we live in a world where within the last 72 hours, Desmond Bane got traded for four first-round picks, you know?
I remember they should try something kind of what Caserio did with Deshaun Watson. It was just create a little mini-auction where, all right, Durant approves going to these teams. Hey, you teams, go ahead and make him your best offer.
Yeah.
Like, we'll approve our trade ahead of time and everything, and then you make your best offer. It's just, and then you could drive the price up.
It's funny you say that, circling back to the topic that we were hitting earlier this segment about the Texans division championships. There was a ranking of general managers by a fantasy football writer named Patrick Doherty that had Nick Caserio 12th. Text message, the Watson trade to Cleveland alone should get Nick into the top 10 of any GM power rankings.
You know what? I'm glad he mentioned that too. Right. Yeah, he will never get as much credit for that as he should, because people who weren't in Houston don't understand how brutal that was. You've got some GMs like Joe Shane last year of the Giants arguing with people on his own staff about, nope, nobody wants Saquon Barkley. Nope, nobody really wants him, because one of his staffers in that Hard Knocks episode said, well, I think there's teams out there that might want him. Shouldn't we explore a trade? And he said, oh, I don't want to go through that again. Took years off my life. Meek little clown.
Yep.
What the hell? It was hard emotionally for you.
Yeah.
Because the year before they'd had trade drama and speculation and everything. Oh, I'm so sorry. And he was just insisting that nobody would really, really want Saquon Barkley. So they didn't even explore a trade with him.
No, but the part...
The next year.
Yeah, the part you point out, though, where it's like, oh, woe is me. You know, like, oh, yeah, it was. This was so hard on me. Like,
oh, were people up in your mentions?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too... Are you 20?
Yeah.
Like, what the... This is your job.
Yeah.
Is to deal with stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, you're right, man. Nick, you and I have brought this up many times. I would have bailed on the whole Deshaun Watson thing for a couple of third round picks at some point along that saga that he stuck.
I would have
out.
Been a pathetic little half man like Joe Shane.
I would have been very
times.
Shane-esque in that whole thing. Yeah. And I mean, you got to keep in mind, if there's no Deshaun Watson trade with Cleveland, there is no Will Anderson Jr. on this team. He's Will Anderson being, and there were others too, depending on how you look at it, because Nick doesn't ever hang on to a pick and just use it. He moves around all the time, so it's really hard to draw the. It's really hard to pull up the graphic of, okay, what exactly did they get out of the Deshaun Watson trade? But there are players that are tangentially attached to all those picks, and it's a long list of guys, some good, some great, some not so good. But I think the one biggest thing, like if you, like they got Will Anderson out of this thing. Will Anderson's going to be one of the best defensive players in football, I think, over the next decade. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. There's two GM power rankings that we've brought up in the last few days on the show. This one had him 12th. The other one, I can't remember whose it was, but had him, it was an article, I think on Sportsnet or something like that, had Nick 10th, and all the nine guys ahead of him on that power ranking all had been GMs for teams that had at the very least made a conference title game. I don't think Nick's not going to crash through the top eight or nine GMs until the Texans get to an AFC title game. I think, and I think Nick would say that's totally fair. You know, I think Nick would not care about power rankings as to what people think of his job. But if he were to care and he were to come up with a subjective criteria, I would think he would have getting deep into the playoffs as part of that. I would.
Yeah,
think.
No, division titles are nice, but it's I've always just looked at it as almost it's one of those things that, yeah, sure, you should appreciate the fact that you won the division and everything. But depending on what your standards are, that's the bare minimum. Like, that's the first notch in what you're actually trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's in your hierarchy of things that you want to accomplish on the season. That's the bare minimum of, like, look, yeah, we better win the division. And beyond that, it's, yes, ideally you want to get to be the kind of team that can consistently get to the conference championship. That's the way Belichick always framed it, was that, you know, there's a lot of randomness once it comes to getting to that Final Four, like actually winning a Super Bowl, as they can attest, as we can attest with the Astros. Like, it's no matter how good you are, it's really, really hard to win the championship. But if you're good enough to consistently get to the championship game, then you improve your odds dramatically year to year.
Nick, even in answering, when he was on with us last Thursday, he was answering the question. You asked him about Brady and CJ watching Brady film and et cetera. And so Nick goes back to his time in New England with Brady those first few years. And even the way, if we were to go back and listen, even the way he talked about those first few years of Brady, he's like, you know, the first year he's in there, we won the Super Bowl. Second year, we were 9-7. We weren't very good, which is funny because he's just been the GM for two 10-7 teams. But anyways,
right.
But then he frames the next 2 years they won the Super Bowl. But the way he framed it in talking to you and me, was, you know, and then the next 2 years after going 9-7, you know, we put ourselves in a spot where, you know, we, you know, kind of got in a position where we could win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's not we won a Super Bowl. It's we put ourselves in position.
There are so many things. And that comes from Belichick. That was, as I understood it, Belichick's philosophy. Is one of these quotes that you'll see quotes from John Wooden and Mike Krzyzewski and Bill Belichick and various other great coaches where if anybody says the things they do, if anybody who's not those guys says it, it sounds like loser talk.
Yeah.
But those guys say it and people don't want to believe it. That like, no, we genuinely don't. Krzyzewski would say, we really try hard not to worry about wins or whether we win the game or anything. It's all about like doing the things that put you in position to win. But then, you know, Caserio said something like that a few years ago about you can't control the wind sometimes. And people were livid.
Yeah.
Livid.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know at what point you're okay to follow the philosophy and methodology of the people who have won more championships than anybody else. But you're not allowed to talk about it, apparently, until you've actually won the championships. I like trying to copy the methodology of people that have won championships.
That win a bunch. Yeah. Well, it's funny, too. Like, you go, I'm just going off the top of my head. Just racking my brain. They were in, you know, the Patriots with Belichick and Brady were in, what, 9 Super Bowls? They won 6. They lost 3. They lost the 2 to the Giants and the 1 to Nick Foles. To my recollection, there wasn't a single one that wasn't a close game in the fourth quarter. Like, they were all close games, you know? Like, that's the true, like, putting yourself in position kind of thing. You know, hey, we made the Super Bowl. Now we're in position. We're in the fourth quarter. They close the deal 6 times. They don't close the deal 3 times. So that's all you got to do, Seth, is just get to 9 Super Bowls, and you're bound to win a few of them.
That's all you got to do.
That's all
you
got to do. Yeah.
Well, maybe Belichick could have actually done something with his life if it had been Super Bowl or die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, he should be ashamed of himself for slacking all those
years. What's he up to these days? We haven't talked about him enough, Bill Belichick. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
Actually, we haven't talked about him in a couple weeks.
It's been a couple
weeks. Relative radio silence on that.
It has. It'll pick back up. Don't worry. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we roll on here. Pettycast, top of the hour. We got a lot of petty to get to today. We'll do that at 8 o'clock. Jonathan Alexander had an article in the Chronicle yesterday that the Texans' new headquarters and practice facility that they're going to build is picking up steam. They're going to be picking a location for it, it looks like, in the pretty near future. I went and did a little deep dive on the Cowboys' big facility they have, the star. Yeah, I've identified the things that I want to have for our facility here based on what they have up there. I've drafted 3 food establishments and 3 retail establishments. These are must-haves for the Texans' new big facility that they're going to build. We'll do that coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, do you have a preference, Seth, as to where the Texans put this new Texopolis that they're going to be constructing here in the near future?
For me personally, when I spend the most time at the actual Texans facility, it's for training camp.
Yep.
I kind of would like it to be a little bit further out. Yeah. I don't think it will be. I don't think they want to move too far away from the stadium, but we'll see. Whichever county gives, I'd like it to be maybe down somewhere where I can get like a little bit of a sea breeze or something like that. down Angleton way,
Lake Jackson. Yes, yeah.
Or yeah.
Can they? Maybe they can build it on the Kima Boardwalk. You know, collaborate, do a collab with the Fertittas.
And like a roller coaster that goes through the strength training facility.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I think, honestly, it doesn't really make a difference to me. I would just prefer that I not be too far outside the loop just because that's, you know, yeah.
Well, for them, I mean, they've got to, I would think they take this into consideration, but, you know, they've got they've got a whole constituency of employees that have built their lives around going to NRG Stadium for work every day. I mean, if you all of a sudden move that facility out like deep into Katy somewhere, that materially changes commutes and things like that. I mean, this just in, Houston, fairly sprawling, big
it's
city.
It's fairly sprawling. Yeah. Although if people wanted to be closer to the city, so if people wanted to be closer to the headquarters, then they're paying a lot more per square foot than if they go further out.
Yep.
So there might be a lot of employees that would actually appreciate being able to go out and like not have a long commute. But so I told you the Falcons facility is in Flowery Branch, which is pretty far north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. Or at least I haven't been there in 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
But it's suburban, but still has a country feel to it.
Yeah.
Or at least it did then.
Yep. For those who don't know what we're talking about, because maybe you didn't see Jonathan's article, we talked about it on this show. The Texans, it would appear, are going to be building some sort of new practice facility with a headquarters for the team. And it looks like chances are, good chance, that it'll also entail an entertainment district of some sort, patterned after the Cowboys Frisco complex campus that has all sorts of shopping and eateries, and it has an arena there. They have concerts there, in addition to all the Cowboys stuff that goes on out there.
Right, and this is where it gets interesting, because there's a couple components. One is that whatever tax breaks, whichever counties are willing to provide. And then two, if the Texans are going to team up with some kind of commercial real estate investors or developers that have a lot of experience with stuff like this, then you can, it's extra revenue generating.
Oh yeah.
Remember the Texans had those fitness clubs, Texans Fit, for a while. They ended up selling those to Evo, I think. Okay. But that's the type of stuff that you can, you can be partners in the restaurants there.
Yeah.
So there's a natural attraction. Those real estate developers and those businesses have the benefit of being associated with the Texans, their email lists and everything else that goes on. So from a business standpoint, it's intriguing.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't know how much the average fan cares about that.
Yeah.
I think the average fan probably thinks, like, okay, if it's a cool, fun place to go for watch parties, if there's some restaurant, maybe there's an Andre Johnson Steakhouse, I don't know.
Yeah.
That then it becomes a destination. That part would be cool, especially, and then training camp. Maybe the facilities at training camp are a little bit more permanent and comfortable and all that.
Yep, for sure. So I did a little digging on the Star up in Frisco, the Cowboys complex, which is, you know, it's gold standard when it comes to this sort of thing. They do have a hotel, Seth. That was one of the things you and I were wondering yesterday. They have an Omni Hotel there, which is, Omni is a nice upscale brand. So I would imagine that anything with the Texans would encompass probably a hotel of some sort as well there. And who knows, depending on the proximity to the stadium, that might be where teams stay when they come in from out of town. You know, when the road teams come visit. I know that happens quite a bit with Tillman Fertitta's Hotel. The Post Oak is where, that's where a lot of the opposing teams come in and stay. They stay at the Fertitta's Hotel. So there is an Omni Hotel at the one in Dallas. They've got 25 eating establishments and 21 retail stores. I'm going to draft three of each for our new complex here in Houston. If the McNairs are listening right now, if Mike Tolman is listening, and they're trying to decide what types of restaurants or retail to have, these are the ones that I vote for, okay, if my vote counts. The Cowboys have a thing called D's Table Burgers and More. It's sort of a brunch and lunch spot. I can envision you and I going there like right after we get done at 8 a.m., going and getting a quick brunch or a breakfast there and then zipping back over to practice. You know what I mean? Like I think that or hitting lunch after practice. Nice burger right there. D's Table.
That's a lot better than the usually when you and I go to Denny's.
Denny's. No disrespect, Denny's. But yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
I do too. That happened, by the way, three skillets. So
I had to carb up, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
That was 50 pounds ago.
That was incredible. It was. It was a different time and place.
Training camp's a lot more enjoyable when you're 50 pounds lighter.
They have Pete's Dueling Piano Bar.
Ooh!
I find dueling pianos to be one of the most underrated never had a bad time places to go.
I think it's one of those things that people like to scoff at and look down on, but just go ahead and give it a try,
and
okay?
Next thing you know, you're dropping $50 in the jar so you can hear Don't Stop Believing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the NASCAR or NHL of the dining world, in that you can't really appreciate hockey or NASCAR until you attend it in person.
That's what it is.
Scoff at dueling pianos all you want.
I love dueling pianos.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. My third one, they have a Kane Rosso there, which we used to have here in Houston, and the one I would go to, we don't have anymore. It's not there. They used to have one, I think, on Alabama, right near downtown. It's a really good wood-fired pizza place, like really good pizza. So I wouldn't mind bringing that back. So those are my three food. And they've got all sorts of, they got sushi places and upscale steakhouses and Italian places. We got a lot of those around here. The retail, the one I want, I'm sort of a collectibles buff. I wish I could afford more of them. They've got a collectible store that looks amazing there called Cards in a Box. I would want that for sure.
So it's sports. It's
sports collectible. Yes, okay. Well, I can see myself spending an obscene amount of money in there, like after practice one day. They have a day spa there, hiatus day spa.
Well, they could have, you know what, for a place like that too, the signings, the autograph signings and everything. The players, that's actually, that's a nice little perk for the players too.
Yeah.
You can get an appearance fee without having to go out of your way or anything. Just go over and do that.
Yeah.
It's a natural fit.
It's true. Yeah. Go to practice and then go over and get a little like a Henry Toa Toa autograph glossy or something like that.
Yeah. I would have had so many more chains, when I was a player. If I could have just made it easier to just go. Obviously, I don't know, $20,000 an
more
autograph
you,
signing or
you,
something.
Yeah, more than you already have. Right. Hiatus Day Spa. There would be nothing better than a post training camp practice massage. We've been standing out in this heat. I'm gonna go get me a massage at the day spa.
Texans can't go anywhere near this. They can't have the. You're
just talking for me. Yeah.
Texans massage.
Yeah.
Don't Google it.
Of all the businesses that could go in there, that'll be the one that does not have a Texans logo on.
Unless that's their key to like push down the scandal in the search in the search results. This could be an SEO play.
Yeah.
We're gonna do Texans Massage Therapy Center, and then we'll heavily promote it to the point where all the Deshaun stories get pushed down to the third or fourth page.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have a place in the one in Frisco at the Cowboys big facility up there called the Gents Place. It's an upscale barber and men's grooming parlor.
Oh, it's kind of like the boardroom.
The boardroom, that's
fun. You go there and they make you feel special.
Yeah. You can see the pictures of the one up in Dallas. You can see in the background all the bottles of expensive whiskey. Can you imagine a sweaty Payne and Pendergast going in there and just sitting down in the chair and getting a nice straight edge razor while we're sipping a little bourbon in the chair?
Yeah, I'm burping up my skillet residue and
from D's table. Yes,
make me purty.
Yeah. So those would be the things that they have up in Dallas that I would want for this.
The thing that I don't want, and I don't think that we would have to fear this, is the zoo like environment that they've created for the players up there at the Star.
It just
sounds like you're constantly on display. There's people walking, like looking in on you while you're working out, while they're on tours and all like that. That's I think the McNairs are usually pretty good about letting the football people be as isolated as they want to be.
Yes.
And because you've heard so many different Cowboys players talk about how it's like, as much as distractions and everything are probably overplayed or a cliche, it's not with the Cowboys, because it feels like they are constantly, Jerry Jones almost, he wants to be a spectacle all the time.
Yes.
And he wants everybody to mingle with the players or see the players. Most players and coaches really, really don't want that. So I just hope it doesn't become like that. Don't make it a human zoo.
Yeah, that's a really good recommendation. Again, if you're listening, McNairs, Mike Tolman, no human zoo. Got it? People are texting in what they want at this place. Texans-themed Cavenders and a Ninfas. They have a Lucchese shop at the one up in Dallas. I'm not a big cowboy boot buying guy, so I didn't put that there. But someone's saying, Sean, are you into sports cards? Not sports cards, but I have a lot of like framed autograph pictures. Disproportionate amount to the amount that I make. Because someday I hope to have a really like cool man cave that I'm hanging all these things in,
I don't usually, whenever I buy an autographed picture of somebody, I don't, it's usually when somebody has asked me like, hey, would you be able to get the, an autographed picture of such and such for this charity event? And I'm always like, I don't ask athletes for their autographs, hard and firm rule. So I'll usually go buy an autographed picture and then give it to them, to which I probably pay more money than they're going to get. So that's one of my charitable donations that I can't write off. I guess I could. Tried to because it feels dirty. I don't know. So I'm like, I got this Nolan Ryan thing. Here you go.
That's hilarious. Really fun. You don't like asking for autographs, so you go to a memorabilia store and buy it.
It's the same thing. So I buy something for like $250 and then they go put it out at their silent auction and probably get $250 or something. The only, I don't get any credit.
No.
You know, for I don't want anybody to, like, I don't tell the person, hey, I went and paid for this. But I don't want to be that guy. Don't ever ask. It's just, you know, when you're around athletes all the time, you don't want to be the guy that are like, oh, great, here comes Seth.
Awkwardness have a price? For Seth, it does. $500 for this autographed Andre Johnson picture. All right, PettyCast. Let's get petty. 713-572-4610. PettyCast time. We do it every week at Tuesday at 8 o'clock, and we do it a lot of petty this week. Coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.